And welcome to Midday. My guest today is the president of the Baltimore City Council, Zeke Cohen. He's been a strong advocate for a package of zoning bills that originally enjoyed wide support from the council, but now it appears that some members are having second thoughts. Let's talk about that and the kind of input that the community has given council members that they've received in recent weeks, and you know how that's maybe changing some people and their perspective on those bills, and plenty of other stuff to talk about as well. Council President Cohen joins me here in Studio A. Good to see you, sir.
Tom, always good to be with you, brother.
So before we talk about the zoning bills, I do want to ask you about the Sisson Street dump. I'm not sure what the official name is, the landfill, the bulk trash place. There was an RFP that the Baltimore Development Corporation issued some time ago, and there was at least one developer very interested in developing that site. That means moving the dump somewhere else. And they were going to put in a grocery store, which the folks in that neighborhood, Remington, really like. We're talking about the dump that's at the corner of 28th and Sisson Street, right near the bridge. That RFP has now been canceled. It's now been withdrawn. So what does that mean? That means there's no developer in the picture. There is a task force that the mayor put together to decide where to move the dump. One of the proposals had it going over to Falls Road. There was a lot of opposition to that. But it seems like, you know, after several years of a developer, you know, thinking through and talking to the community about what could be there, looks like that ain't going to happen. What's up?
Yeah, so first I want to appreciate the mayor for listening to the community backlash against the Falls Road site and authorizing this task force. And I really want to thank my colleagues, Councilmember Ramos, who's been leading this thing, Councilman Jones, Torrance, and all the folks that have participated. It's a really important site for Baltimore, figuring out how we dump our trash. And, you know, are there opportunities, like you said, Tom, for development, for maybe a grocery store? It's important stuff. And I just got off with one of my colleagues who told me that the only option that has been taken off the table is the Falls Road site. They are not going to have the dump there. So all the community members that voiced their opinion, democracy works. They were able to take that site off the table. They are looking at several other sites. They are exploring what is best both for the workers of DPW, for our communities, and for the possibility of increased development in the general Remington area. And so I know that that RFP was canceled with, I believe it was Seawall Development, but I think every option is still on the table except for Falls Road.
So Falls Road's off, but if they do find another place to relocate the dump, does that mean the RFP can come back into play? I mean, can Seawall develop that site?
I believe so.
Is the task force, you know, tasked with making that kind of decision?
Look, ultimately that is about the mayor and the city council deciding how we want to use our land. That would clearly require some zoning. So the task force is there to provide recommendations, to support making sure community's voice is heard throughout this process. And I don't think that's the end of the conversation about having a grocery store over there. I believe folks are still very much open to that as an option. But again, from my colleagues, what they shared with me is that they're looking at a variety of alternative sites. They're thinking about minimizing the environmental negative impacts and how to best support the workers of DPW, so that folks can, you know, dump in a way that is not causing harm.
If Seawall or anybody else isn't developing that site, we've heard from Khalil Saeed, who's the deputy director that oversees this kind of thing, that there's no money in the budget to move the dump. I mean, the money for the moving of the dump was going to come from the people buying that parcel of land to develop it. So the development of the land and the moving of the dump seem to go very much hand in hand, right?
Look, the reality is there's always money to be moved if we have a shared goal and if we want to move it. But of course, when there is an opportunity for development that can augment or support moving the dump to somewhere else, I think that's helpful too. I think this is an opportunity for a win-win. I do think that there may be a higher and better use of that space, whether that's housing, whether that's a grocery store. I don't know. I'm listening closely to what the task force has to say. But I think that when we set our mind on any goal, this city can accomplish it. And it is always helpful to have private partners that are doing development with us hand in hand.
All right. So we're going to, of course, be talking to the mayor right after the first of the year, and the task force, he has told them that he'd like to get their recommendation close to the beginning of the year. So we will keep our eye on that. We're also keeping our eye on this package of zoning bills that you were a very strong advocate for, as was the mayor, as was Councilman Dorsey and others. There's a package of four of them. Three of them have passed the council, and then one of them is kind of hung up. There was a good bit of opposition to these bills that you've heard about over the last, it's been like 6 months or so since they were originally introduced. This is a guy named Michael Scott. He's a resident. He says that the bill's risky and it's untested, and that it continues a pattern of the city experimenting with new approaches to housing and urban infrastructure, particularly in black neighborhoods. Here's what he had to say.
Roland Park, Guilford, Homelands, Cedarcroft, and other Covenant communities are functionally isolated from the very density, conversions, institutional uses, and speculative pressures this bill unleashes. Their private covenants, architectural boards, and enforcement mechanisms give them a protective shield that my neighborhood and every black middle-class neighborhood like it simply do not have. They are excluded in practice, and even when this bill pretends to be universal. Meanwhile, neighborhoods like ours, without private covenants, but with rich history, culture, and intergenerational black wealth, are expected to absorb all the risk. You could do this right, but you're jamming it down our throats.
You could do it right, but you're jamming it down our throats. This is a bill that would allow up to four units per lot in the city in neighborhoods that currently have single-family homes. And the mayor and others have said, you know, this actually is an advance of equity, an advance of making affordable housing, available to people. But then others are saying, you know, that argument doesn't hold water with them. What's your response?
Yeah, here's what I know, Tom, is that this country and certainly our city are facing a housing crisis. There is simply not enough housing in cities like Baltimore, certainly on the West Coast, where we see rental prices completely out of control, and then on most East Coast cities as well. And Baltimore is staring down the barrel of an affordability crisis. And so in totality, this bill package is about increasing the supply of housing to our city in all different neighborhoods. And I would actually argue that having a mix of people between folks who own a home, folks who may want to rent, is a really good thing. Here's what I would also say to Mr. Michael Scott and others' point, though, is that I think what's been really beautiful about this is you see the democratic process playing out. Community has had a lot of opportunity to share support and opposition. There have been three separate listening sessions for this one bill. There have been two hearings at this point. And so the part that I reject in his statement is that this is not being shoved down anyone's throat. We are having a big public debate about what type of housing we want to have. And I actually think that Mr. Scott and others have brought up some really good points. That is why I've instructed my colleagues and am working closely with the mayor to think about, are there some amendments that could ease and ameliorate some of folks' concerns? I think the point about racial housing covenants is a really good one. We know those excluded both black folks and Jewish folks like me as well. And so I do want to be very thoughtful and sensitive about how we proceed. I want to make sure all of my colleagues on the council are listening closely to their constituents. And I've just appreciated the back and forth that I've heard within communities, within the council itself. This is what this process is supposed to look like. And there have been moments where tempers have flared, but you know what? That's okay, because at the end of the day, we want a great bill package that supports more housing in Baltimore. And I am proud to say that actually four out of the five bills have gone through, and we're having a really good debate about this last one.
Yeah, 4 out of 5. I had said 3 out of 4, and I got the numbers wrong. Okay. There were some folks who spoke in favor of the bill. Here's a developer, a guy named Dele Akinrade. He was one of the few voices who supported the bill, and he says that this would advance the possibility of home ownership.
And I think one of the underappreciated things about this bill is a path for home ownership, I think, is created with this bill. As opposed to building a 3,000 square foot home, I can build four 2,000 square foot homes, and a condominium declaration allows those units to be sold. They don't have to be rented. They can be sold, you know. So I think, again, I meant no disrespect, you know, but I think if we're also thinking future focus, you know,
thank
I think,
you.
You know, cities are meant to change. This is in the middle of the nowhere county.
That's Dele Akinrade speaking in favor of the zoning bill that the city council is considering. If you just joined us, it's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is the president of the Baltimore City Council, Zeke Cohen. So, Mr. President, there's no doubt you've gotten a lot of feedback on this package of bills and this last one in particular. So do you think the amendment process will, in fact, you know, move forward? Do you expect a number of amendments? It's been 6 months since, as I mentioned, since this was originally introduced. How do you see this playing out?
Look, I do. I have great faith in communities in Baltimore and in my colleagues on the city council to be able to hear each other and move forward. I do think that at the end of the day, everyone wants the same goal, which is our neighborhoods to thrive, which is more options and opportunities for people to have a place to call home. And I think the question is, how do we get there? And so I've actually, like I said, really appreciated all the feedback that we've heard, both positive and some of the critiques. I think it will ultimately lead to a stronger final product for this last bill.
And before we leave this subject, I want to listen to some remarks by Councilmember Paris Gray. He's one of your colleagues on the council who urged a slowing down this process and seeing what can happen.
And looking at the three previous bills that were passed, one of the things a lot of folks that I was hearing from in my district was the lack of process, and they felt like things were rushed. And so if we pass those three, and now we're looking to do this consequently in like a month's time, I think we just need to slow down. Because at this moment right now with all the discourse, I'm in good conscience cannot move forward with the bill. But this is a question of process, once again, and not policy.
Welcome back to Midday. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, it's a midday holiday tradition that we will continue with great joy. Helicon and friends will join us for a midday mini concert right here live in Studio A in advance of their 40th annual Winter Solstice Concert. This weekend, they are playing 2 shows at Krausser Auditorium at Goucher College, and we'll have a preview right here from Studio A tomorrow on Midday. They play music drawn from traditions around the globe, and they are some of the finest world musicians from Baltimore and beyond. So we'll celebrate the winter solstice together with music that is surely going to put you squarely in the holiday spirit. So join me and Helicon tomorrow here on Midday at noon. And if you've just joined us today, my guest is Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen. You can join our conversation as well. It's a different phone number than the number that you call to make a pledge. It's 410-662-8780. So, Mr. Council President, I want to ask you your take on the seeming feud that is popped up again between the state's attorney, Ivan Bates, and our mayor, Brandon Scott. State's Attorney Bates sent a letter to Mayor Scott a few weeks ago saying that he no longer wanted to coordinate and cooperate with MONSEE, the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. It's reported that they met yesterday, a couple of weeks after this letter arrived. What's your take on what's going on between those two and whether or not this is going to affect, in a deleterious way, the efforts that have been incredibly successful in reducing the number of homicides and non-fatal shootings.
Yeah, and Tom, I need to set the context here, which is that Baltimore is seeing some of the lowest homicides in our city's history this year, and that is year over year of declines in violent crime. And that is because of the great work of Mayor Brandon Scott and State Attorney Ivan Bates and Governor Wes Moore and the police department and law enforcement and the city council and our communities. It is about collaboration, and what we are doing right now is working. And so my message to my very good friend Brandon and my very good friend Ivan is that we need to continue to collaborate with each other, because when we take our foot off the gas, when we stop supporting each other, that's when I worry we'll see a rise in violent crime. Now, look, State Attorney Bates sent a letter. I was able to read most of it and consult with some folks in the legal community. I actually think that he made some strong points about needing to understand some of the behind the scenes that happens with Muncie, with Safe Streets. And so I think on a lot of what he laid out, he is not wrong. I think it's important, though, that the mayor and the state's attorney and their teams be able to communicate in a way that lifts each other up and that acknowledges where there are challenges and seeks to solve them. And so for my role as council president, I'm always going to partner with Ivan Bates, with Brandon Scott, with my colleagues to make sure all of Baltimore is winning. And that's what we're seeing right now. And so for me, it is imperative that they find a path to resolve any of the issues that exist, and that we continue to stay on this incredible trajectory of lowering violent crime in our city.
Is it going to take an arbitrator? Is it going to take somebody like you to sit down with them? I mean, I think it's a hopeful sign that the two of them met yesterday, evidently, and discussed their differences. But when it comes to things like, for example, State's Attorney Bates said in his letter that there are some services that people that Muncie works with, they don't qualify for the services that the state's attorney's office offers. So they have to get those services from Muncie. But then Mr. Bates said that Muncie doesn't communicate who's getting what services. And they actually sometimes find this out at trial. So there they are, you got people on the witness stand, and the state's attorney is saying that the cases are being affected because they don't have information. I mean, is Muncie transparent enough? Is there a solution to that? Is there any reason that Muncie can't divulge what services they're offering to what people? Are there complications that maybe the rest of us aren't hip to?
Yeah, look, Tom, I think a lot of this comes down to a breakdown in communication. I do think that, again, the state's attorney raised some important issues in his letter to the mayor. I think that what is ultimately going to solve the issues is for folks to be able to speak directly to each other, principal to principal. I am always happy to support dialogue, engagement. I find with my colleagues on the council, sometimes I'm the bridge that helps folks be able to reconcile their challenges. But sometimes I'm not. And whatever it's going to take to get the mayor and the state's attorney back on track, that's what I'm going to support. I continue to encourage them when we talk to just work through some of these issues. And again, I just want to lift up that I think in addition to the outstanding work that our police officers are doing, in addition to the way that community has shown up these last couple of years and said enough is enough, that both the mayor and the state's attorney are doing a really good job. And that I think that's what people expect, is for all of us to work together to solve problems. That's what the communities want, and that's what I'm going to continue to encourage.
And we should just remind folks that as of today, we're at 132 homicides, which is an awful lot of people to die, but it's a lot fewer than used to die.
It is. And just on that point, Tom, look, none of us are going to be satisfied until that number is zero. All of us, Mayor Scott, myself, Ivan Bates, we got into public service because we believe that Baltimore can be the safest city in America. And I want my kids to grow up in a place that is truly safe, that is truly diverse, is truly welcoming. And so we're not going to stop until that number is even lower. But to think about where we were when I came into government around 8 or 9 years ago, when we were 350 plus homicides in a year, the amount of loss of human life, and the incredible comeback story that our city is experiencing right now as it relates to violent crime, I do think it bears acknowledging, and folks should celebrate that, and they should celebrate that together, because I really don't think it's about one individual person that's driven that decline. It's about partnership and community and working together in a different kind of way. Seeing the city and the state join arms. Tom, you remember not too long ago when there was a lot of noise and friction between the mayor and the governor, and the state's attorney and the governor. And so having this lockstep, hand-in-hand partnership across agencies, across the city and the state, I really think is a huge part of what's driving down the violence. And as council president, what you are always going to get from me is a laser focus on continuing to drive down crime within our communities. That's what I expect of my colleagues. That's what the Public Safety Committee is going to continue to do, is the oversight. And I'm going to continue to try to be that bridge to bring folks together to solve these issues.
Yeah, and just to put it in context for folks, I just had Police Commissioner Worley on just a few days ago, last week. And we were talking the year that had the lowest number of homicides recorded in the last 50 plus years was, I think, 1977, in which there were 171 homicides. So here we are on the...
We're beating that, Tom.
Yeah, the 18th of December with 13 days left in the year, and we're at 132. So it seems like we will have the fewest number of homicides in more than 50 years. So that is something to be proud of and be happy about. But it is so disconcerting when it does seem that, you know, we've got two of the leaders in that effort, you know, just they're talking over each other. They're not talking with each other.
I fundamentally believe that they want the same thing and that they will find the path to reconcile. I just have too much respect for Brandon Scott and for Ivan Bates to think that this is going to continue on. I think that they are both clearly interested in reconciling. They met yesterday. I heard it was productive. And again, I'm looking forward to helping in the way that the city council can to just continue to shine a bright light on the good work that is happening and to acknowledge anytime we fall short.
I want to talk to you about education. You have a deep personal commitment and connection to education. You were a teacher. You founded a nonprofit to help kids transition from high school to college. And you said when you got elected, you and I did a number of candidate forums. We talked a lot about, you said, the days of the city council being uninvolved in the education of our children are over. I want to ask you in particular about transporting kids to school. Liz Bowie and her colleagues at the Baltimore Banner have done terrific reporting about the difficulties that so many kids have going to school. Sometimes they have commutes of, you know, 2+ hours to get to and from school because there are no yellow buses, there are no places that, no system set up to transport kids. And some of them go across town because we have schools that you can choose to go to and they don't necessarily have to be in your neighborhood. What is it that the city council, if anything, can do about that particular issue, getting kids to school in an easier, more fluid, and more effective way?
Yeah, and it's funny, Tom, because I remember 7 years ago as chair of the Education Committee on the council holding a hearing on exactly this topic, the lack of ability for kids to get to school on time. The Fund for Educational Excellence did a report on it. The Banner's done exceptional journalism. It is a real, true problem. And I think that the Banner has come up with this idea of how much would it cost to do some sort of municipal school bus system. They've been working with this hop, skip, drive program to think through what the algorithm could look like. Look, here's where I fall on this. I think fundamentally we need to fix our broken public transportation system. I do not want to spend a single dollar that does not go toward not just getting our kids to school in a reasonable amount of time, but getting their parents to work. Because if I'm a person that lives in West Baltimore and I work at the Port of Maryland right there in South or Southeast Baltimore, guess what? I have a multiple hour commute ahead of me. So I think it is critically important that we are focused on the Be More Bus Plan, which is a plan that the MTA put out relatively recently when we had our recent roadshow where the CMTA comes to every jurisdiction. We had a almost unanimous showing of council members, delegates, state senators, all on the same message, which is you've got to fund the red line and you got to fund the Be More Bus plan, which I think would meaningfully address some of the commute times that our kids are facing. Again, I'm not opposed to any option. I definitely want to look at the work that the Banner's been doing around municipal buses. But for me, it's about how do we improve the overall public transportation system, because our elders, parents, kids, all of them can't get to where they need to go. And that limits our ability to grow as a city.
And those are really long-term solutions. So the red line, you know, even if it were approved tomorrow, I mean, it would be years and years before the thing was actually up and functioning. But it seems that your focus wants to be on improving the current system rather than a separate system that concentrates on students getting them to school.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, I remember during that hearing I held years ago, just the very, very high price tag that having a municipal bus system would cost. Most cities our size don't have municipal school buses for high school kids. I will acknowledge, though, that Baltimore has, in many ways, worse transportation than places like New York and Philadelphia and others. And so improving public transit, improving the buses, the metro, the red line, putting a dang on shovel in the ground from east to west Baltimore. I mean, this thing has been punted for so long, and I was truly grateful to Governor Moore for revitalizing it, for bringing it back from the dead after Governor Hogan canceled it. And whatever it looks like, I need to see some action on it, because to your point, Tom, you're right. It has been such a long journey, so much planning and unplanning. And so whatever the mode is going to be, I am urging our amazing governor and the MTA team, let's get going on the red line so that we can move people from east to west and back in our city.
I think we have a question from a caller about this subject. Let's go to John in Parkville. John, we're almost, our time with the city council president's almost up. What's your quick question for him?
My quick question is, shouldn't we be taking money from the future expenditures of the blueprint and using it to meet this priority? And how did the Kerwin Commission, after years of study, miss the fact that Baltimore City school children weren't even getting into the classroom as they made their recommendations to spend billions of dollars?
All right. Thanks for that comment.
Yeah, look, I don't sit on the I was not on the Kerwin Commission. And, you know, the blueprint really is a state level bill. So you have to have one of our delegates or senators on to address that. But I do think John's overall point is right. If kids can't get to school, it's very hard for them to learn.
Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen has been with me here in Studio A. Council President, thank you for your time, and happy holidays.
You too, man.